So yeah, if everybody wants to just start with their names and positions.
Yeah. I'm Chris Floyd, F-L-O-Y-D. I'm the co-game director for the Star.
And I'm Zach Garris. I'm the lead writer working on Life is Strange Before the Storm.
Cool. So the story for Before the Storm puts us kind of a rewind, forgive me. But it starts us before we're dealing with Chloe and Rachel. How do you even get started immersing yourself in this space, right? And the emotions are real high for everybody after Life is Strange. Do you feel kind of this weight getting started with a project like this?
Absolutely. I think everyone at Deck Nine, we identify as fans of the franchise. We loved the game before we even had the opportunity to talk to Square about working on it. So I think for all of us, it was an intensely personal connection to that world and that story. And when we first got the project, when we were first sort of even just having conversations with Square about what kinds of stories we would tell, it was thrilling, it was scary, it was the pressure is immense. And we looked at all sorts of characters that we could tell a story from.
Yeah, we looked at a lot of different characters. Square was wonderful in that it was really important to them that Deck Nine, the team at Deck Nine, owned the creative vision for the project. So we're very fortunate to work with people who knew on the Square side, who knew Life is Strange very well, and worked with Donut on the original game and could guide us and help us and give ideas. But they also said, tell us what kind of story you would write. So we thought about a lot of things, but we kept kind of orbiting around Chloe as just this fascinating character, a protagonist who's very different from Max from the first game and her attitude and her situation in life. And then we knew that we needed and wanted to have a really powerful relationship like the one you have with Max and Chloe in the first game. And Chloe and Rachel, obviously we knew Rachel was so important to Chloe. What was that relationship like? You know, we wanted to play that. We wanted to tell that story and see that story come to life.
And we wanted to tell a story that simultaneously felt familiar and nostalgic for fans from the first game, but also offered something new that had a mystery, that had a mythic nature to it. And Rachel particularly felt right for that. This character, everyone in Life is Strange 1, said something about, but that you never actually got to interact with directly.
So mechanically, you know, there's no rewind power, right? Chloe is not gifted with the power to go back in time. So how do players still experiment with choice? Is there a sort of a different way that you want to convey this effect or feeling of choice? Because I'm imagining you can't review the situations like you could in the first one.
We kind of knew we were going out on a limb when we said, okay, we're going to be Chloe. It really didn't make sense for her to have the rewind power. Obviously, she's not familiar with it when she encounters it with Max. We also didn't want it to feel like this world was full of superheroes. That's not really the tone of the game. Max's power is very unique. And so we were talking about Chloe and we said, okay, no power. What does that mean? Like you said, like, how does that affect choices and consequences? What we actually realized is that it means that you make a choice. You don't know what the consequences are going to be, and you're going to live with them. Chloe's stuck with them. You're stuck with them. That's a whole other dynamic. And emotionally for us, that helped for us, that fit for us what we felt like was right for Chloe's story, what Chloe's life is like unfolding. She's a strong character. She's also buffeted by a lot of different currents in her life, her family life, her friendships. And obviously the introduction of this powerful person who is Rachel for her, you know, that felt sort of exciting, and living on the edge was kind of what we wanted our story to be about. So that felt right at that point, not having rewind.
Yeah, and that speaks to what we're hoping the player will experience in getting to step into Chloe's shoes at this time in her life, and what is one of the central themes of the game, which is simply being imprisoned by grief, by loss, by simply being a teenager and having so little control over any aspect of your life or your body or your feelings, and how loud and intense everything can be, asking the player to experience the discomfort of having to make a really difficult decision and not being able to rewind and try something else. No, you have to do what Chloe has to do every day,
sure,
which is make a difficult decision and move forward. That felt really exciting to us too.
Cool. Before the Storm is a 3-episode, essentially miniseries, so you've got not as much time to pack in what I imagine is meant to be just as powerful a punch. Particularly now that we've got Rachel, a character that we only kind of know a little bit about. How do you feel, how did it feel crafting a story around some brand new, pretty significant characters, but in a limited time frame?
Well, limited is an interesting word, I think. We didn't constrict ourselves to 3 episodes out of the gate. We examined stories of all sorts of sort of dimensions. And ultimately, the story we fell in love with felt like a 3-episode story. It's a smaller story than The First Life is Strange in certain aspects. Without the quantum storm, without the time travel power, we found ourselves sort of focusing on this particular core relationship, a number of other relationships, and this theme of loss and of imprisonment and of what it's like to meet someone who, like one person who at the right time, place in your life can radically change everything, kind of letting that be our North Star in determining how, like the scope and the breadth and the depth of the story we wanted to tell, it felt right to kind of live within a 3-episode arc. And so we had a lot of conversations with Square about this question, ultimately just decided to stick with it.
Cool. So tell me a bit about Rachel. Like, Rachel is this almost a mythical character in The First Life is Strange, and now you have this opportunity to build out what she was like. And in the demo that was shown at E3, like, she's a little bit of a firebrand. You can see that she seems to be dealing with something pretty significant that can be chaining into, like, a drinking problem. Who is Rachel?
Yeah.
How do you create Rachel?
Rachel's a bit of a chimera, I think. If you look at every character in the first game, has something to say about her. Characters who don't necessarily have any connection to each other. Characters from sort of all walks of life. The fact that Rachel could strike each one of them in such a way that they all feel like she understood them, that she had something special for them, speaks to her mutability, her kind of her ability to walk into a room, to light it up, and to potentially perform different versions of herself that will enchant and maybe beguile, and maybe in cool ways, and maybe in not so safe ways. That was something that we found really compelling looking at the first game, and something that we were excited about exploring is creating a character who is powerful, but not necessarily safe. What a wonderful opportunity to give the player agency and to confront the player with consequences to their decisions dealing with such a character, to be able to build a radically different kind of relationship with her based on the choices that you make. Yeah. I don't want to spoil.
The first episode just came out today, so which I unfortunately haven't gotten to play yet because I was driving up from Portland. But
you live in Portland?
Yeah. So luckily, it's not too far to get up here. So I'm kind of up from LA, or
we're actually from Denver. So our studio, is in Denver.
I went to school in Portland. I went to Reed.
Oh, nice.
So I love Portland. I love Oregon.
I know a number of Reedies who. It's a lot of creativity that comes out of it. I'm not surprised. I'm wondering, dealing particularly with this relationship between Rachel and Chloe, how did you come up with, like, where to find these dynamics? The demo already kind of touches on this idea of, I guess, sort of the same things that we're dealing with in the life, or the original Life is Strange, between Max and Chloe. Are they friends? Are they more than friends? Where is this level of intimacy? And then we see some of those kinds of same nods when we're leaving the concert with Rachel and Chloe. How do you deal with coming up with that relationship?
I think we started, first of all, with what does Chloe say about Rachel in the first game? Mm-hmm. And it's both a really powerful statement she makes. And Rachel is my angel. Rachel saved me. But also a little bit ambiguous, and or at least unclear what that means, which was great. Gave us a lot of space to understand what that means. So, for example, you see, and we've shown in some of the demo footage earlier about how literally Rachel saves Chloe in this moment in the mill when she's in danger. Great. But we also thought that could be just one aspect of a larger story in which Rachel really brings something to Chloe's life that she needs when she's most abandoned by her father's death, of course. Max, her best friend, who's not communicating from when she's away, and her mother, who looks like she's moving on. Someone coming in, like someone like Rachel's powerful presence, can save Chloe in a much deeper, more existential way. And also that we're going to find a Rachel who has her own problems, some devastating issues in her life that we'll reveal. And Chloe's going to be the right person for her at this moment too. And even that filling that need for somebody else, for Chloe to fill a need for somebody like Rachel, is going to be a big part of redeeming, you know, saving Chloe as well.
That's my favorite thing that we're exploring with this relationship. Chloe is at the bottom of the social hierarchy in her school, who feels like she can't control any aspect of her life, who everybody's disappointed in, the broken girl, mm-hmm. the lost girl. Taking her, living in her shoes for a moment, and then taking the girl who is the complete opposite, it's the top of the hierarchy, who everyone adores, whose life is seemingly perfect, breaking her in a way, and looking at what it's like for Chloe to be strong for that person. What does it mean for her to be able to save Rachel Amber? Is the act of saving Rachel Amber the thing that helps her save herself? Is that what gives her the strength and the desire to get up and out of bed in the morning? I think in my own experiences with grief and we did a lot of research in grief, a lot of different ways. It obsesses you with yourself. It causes you to kind of not be able to escape your own pain. You can't see beyond what's right in front of you and what's the turmoil that's kind of defining you in that moment. Rachel Amber being in need might create room for Chloe to get past herself for a second, to step outside of herself for a second. And the kind of freedom and I think just escape that provides for her in this little window in her life, I think is a neat way to look at how we help each other get past the things that almost destroy us in our lives, like losing a parent.
From a writing perspective, you know, being the lead writer, there's a lot to take on. What is the process like when you're creating a script, creating the characters? Do you have other people that you're giving parts to or collaborating with?
Mm-hmm. Takes a village. For sure. Yeah, so I'm the lead writer on the project, but I'm not the only writer on the project. There are four of us. We have a four-person writer's room.
Mm-hmm.
So we have two men, two women. I'm the oldest. Our youngest is 20, and she's still in school. So we have a very diverse group. It's something that we care about a lot at Deck Nine.
Mm-hmm.
And not just having boxes checked, so to speak. We have a culture of open criticism. It's important for me and for the whole team that we leverage the diversity we have by making sure that everybody in that space is encouraged and sort of demanded, really, that they share their perspectives and their opinions about everything we do, from any one line of dialogue to the high level structural break of the story. So I think we work. I'll talk a little bit about process if you're interested.
Yeah,
right?
I'd love to.
So we'll ask the question, what is this episode going to be about? And we'll brainstorm a bunch of ideas. And over the course of many, many hours, we'll compose a kind of trajectory of an arc for the story, for the characters. We'll come up with the obstacles we want. We'll look at the themes that we're really excited about exploring in that large sort of structural map. And we'll break, part of that process is breaking a story, is breaking that high level idea of a narrative down into scenes and even within the scenes into beats.
Mm-hmm.
And then we break off and individual writers will take over a scene and they'll write that scene. And they will iterate in multiple drafts. And I'll work one-on-one with each writer. We'll decide, based on the high-level break we've conceived of, what does this scene need to be? What's exciting about this scene? What's going to work? What do we need to accomplish here? And they'll write it and I'll read it and review it with them. And we'll do that multiple times. At a certain stage when it's all kind of ready, we'll start sharing with other members of the team at Deck Nine to get more gameplay perspective, cinematic perspective, art perspective, all the different aspects that go into the only thing that ends up mattering, which is the game itself. It's not the script.
Sure.
The script is just sort of the blueprint for that. Yeah. And then at a certain point too, all the writers, we rotate, we look at each other's scenes so that kind of like I said before, we're leveraging the strengths that each individual is bringing by getting their eyes on every part, so that the whole ends up becoming stronger. And then at a certain point, we have to put pencils down. and that's one of the harder things to know and to decide, but usually the production schedule decides it for us.
Yeah, that's the glory of production. Mm-hmm. Somebody can tell you, no, you're done now. No, mm-hmm. It's got to be done now.
The first episode releases today, so you know your baby is out in the world. How is that feeling right now, knowing that there are a couple more episodes down the pipeline?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. You know, we've had since the announcement, because there's such a powerful, big, and really dedicated, passionate group of fans out there, we've been kind of feeling that buzz, that anxiety from them in some cases. You know, we're not, don't nod, what does that mean? Oh, there's no rewind power, what? And so we've been sort of living with that ever since E3 when we announced, and just trying the best we can to stay true to Life is Strange and create something that those fans are gonna love. So yeah, this has been a big moment, I think, finally putting it out there and starting to hear from some of them. And so far, the feedback we've been getting is really, really good. So
is it too good?
Yes, that's very good. You're like, whoa. So that's fantastic. If we're making those fans happy, we've totally done our jobs. It's really for them.
Yeah, it's very humbling. And I don't know what to make of it yet. I think we, Square for sure, and we at Deck9, we do this for the community that the work engages. We want to connect people. We want to create stories that help people connect to each other.
Sure.
This is an enormous privilege to get to do that. And so now to finally see that some people are resonating with the work that we've been living in for a little over a year, it's overwhelming, honestly. Yeah.
No, this isn't your first rodeo, though. There are other projects
Well, so I've been in the industry for 15 years.
I worked in TV and indie film and games before that, but I've never worked on a game like this. I've never worked on a game with this kind of heart or this kind of community that's trying to do the kinds of things this game is doing.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Socially, I think.
Sure. So I guess we're probably creeping right up on time. So I guess sort of the last thoughts of making this, at some point there's got to be kind of that transition, like I imagine it's not direct like Rogue One leads into Episode 4, but we've got these pieces of Before the Storm leading into the Storm. Are there maybe some sci-fi questions that get answered in here?
Good sci-fi doesn't answer. I don't know what your answer is.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we did deliberately go back 3 years before the original game, and our story takes place basically over the course of 3 days. So you're seeing the beginning of this relationship. We're not intending to take you up to the moment, you know, that the moments we know, the spot where season 1 starts. We wanted to tell a story that you don't already know the ending to, and we gave ourselves the room to tell a new and unfamiliar story. Part of the fun, I think, for players is going to be seeing some of, you know, a lot of nods to the original game, obviously, seeing a lot of familiar places and faces through a slightly different perspective, through Chloe's perspective, and earlier in the story. We also very much want to be sure that, hey, life is strange, and while we don't have a rewind power, there's still, you're going to see some of that in the, throughout the game, and really, hopefully, validate that whole, and really just bring these two titles together in a way that isn't just, we're not just sort of locking two puzzle pieces together exactly, but we're enriching this whole world.
That's a good way of putting it. I think our hope is that the ways are many in which fans from the first game will see content that speaks to their understanding of characters, of places, of events, and maybe challenge their understanding. Riff on it, elaborate on it, answer questions, ask new questions, all over the place in surreal and strange ways. We're not shy of the supernatural in the game just because Chloe doesn't have a power. We're handling those threads very differently from the way that the first game did.
Last question, at least for me. One of the things that I adored about the original Life is Strange was the soundtrack. So do you have a particular track in the soundtrack that you feel speaks to you either in Life is Strange or in Before the Storm, a track that you're just like, yep, this one does it for me?
Oh boy, there's so many. So, I mean, I've been just blown away by the music that Daughter has made for the score. They've also contributed several pre-existing and also new original songs for the whole series that you'll be hearing across all three episodes. Those have been amazing. And when we laid some of those score tracks on top of our scenes while they were in development, you know, we've been working this the motion capture and the voice acting performance. And we knew these scenes were good, but when we like put in some of their music, there's the track at the end of the first episode. I'm stealing your answer there.
No, it's good.
is a really powerful moment. And when I heard when Dr. Lee heard it, I said, that's the end of episode one right there. And we took some of our concept images and played the soundtrack, and we're like, yes.
Yeah,
so that's been really.
And just to clarify on what he's saying, so Daughter's this British indie folk band that we've partnered with to compose a complete score for the game. So we're utilizing tracks that they've already written, but we worked with them. We wrote material for them, thematic descriptions of key moments, of key themes, and they wrote songs specifically to each theme, specifically thinking of the characters. That became the kind of toolkit we could use to weave music into the story, and they did an astonishing job.
Great job. People really love it.
I think that is, it's hard to pick a favorite, but I think that is the one at the end of episode one is my favorite.
Yeah, of licensed tracks, I'm really, really proud. I stumbled across it. I was digging for music. I stumbled across a track by a band called Speedy Ortiz called No Below that we put right in the transitions right after the mill scene. And then of Chloe waking up in her bedroom the next morning. That was one that, to me, really summed up Chloe at the beginning of our story. It's kind of the story of friends sort of leaving you behind.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of sad, but really edgy, gritty track. Really,
and in this one moment, it's such a seemingly kind of banal moment of a girl waking up, like just waking up for her day, lethargic and kind of a little like forgetful about what happened the day before. And then the sadness of her world comes crashing in. She remembers, oh, my dad's dead. She remembers my best friend left. She remembers I have to go to school right now. Mm-hmm. And kind of what it's like and the horror of simply waking up when you're in that place. For some reason, the song means that to me. When I hear it every time that scene starts, I'm just like, oh, okay.
Wow. Thank you so much for the time and for answering the questions.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Been really awesome. If folks want to find you, I guess, out on the social media or whatnot, where should they go?
Twitter is the social media that I allow myself. so you can find me at Zach Garris, ZakGarriss.
Okay. And I'm at Deck9_Floyd. That's right. Yeah.
We can send it to you.
Yeah. No, that's right.
No, that's awesome. Okay. Well, thanks a lot. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Same.
Thank you.